Good morning. We are glad that you're with us, and we begun last week talking about 2015 and saying hello to all the opportunities that it provides. And this week we're going to talk about a topic I think it's often pertinent to talk about at the beginning of the year, because we need to examine our finances and our stewardship at the beginning of the year, and especially in the next few weeks and months as you begin to prepare your taxes and things. It gives a good opportunity for you to examine your finances. And this morning we're going to be thinking about how, if we do not choose to examine and seriously consider our finances, how it can ruin our life here and even our life in the next world. And then next week, thinking about once again beginning this year in 2015, we're going to be thinking about our Bible school program and the importance of it and the importance of us being involved in our Bible school program. And so we're thinking about some things that are pertinent to not only today, but for the rest of the year. Controlling the monster, you and money. Money is in some respects life's fire, said P.T. Barnum. It's a very excellent servant, but it's a terrible master. When I think about the monster, what I'm referring to is money as greed. The love of money that causes us to desire it and want it above other things, to place our trust in it. We live in a culture that is constantly hearing the monster say, you need to be greedy now. You need this. You want this. You deserve this. You would be happy if you had this. That's what our culture is constantly feeding us a diet of. And in Luke chapter 12, Jesus will speak about the rich fool. And he says some things that are very important for us to consider in that passage. So turn with me there to Luke 12, verse 13. And Jesus has someone come up to him and he asks him a very odd question. He says, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. He makes this statement. He says, Jesus, I want you to get involved in our family squabble. And I want you to tell my brother what he should do. Kind of like going to your parents. Mom, Dad, tell my brother what he should do. Well, this guy trumps parents, and he goes to Jesus. And he says, Jesus, tell my brother to divide and split the money up with me. And notice what Jesus says. Man, who made me a judge or arbitrator over you? I'm not the one to decide your family squabble. But then notice what Jesus said. He gets to the heart of why they're even having a family squabble. He says, take care and be on your guard against all covetousness. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. And then he'll tell a story we'll look at in just a moment. But before we look at that story, I want us to focus on that long word that nobody likes to say. That is the word that comes from the 10th commandment, thou shalt not covet. The word in the Greek involves this simple meaning, to desire more, to want more and more. And in the language of the 10th commandment, it is to desire what someone else has, to set your heart and your longing upon having someone else's possessions and wanting more and more so that you, and here's the key, you're not content, grateful, or thankful for what you have. Jesus says, thou shalt not be covetous. That you need to be on guard against this sin. And he goes on and he tells this parable. And I want us to read this parable now about a rich fool. And you've heard the story before, but let's look at it again. The land of a rich man produced plentiful. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops. And he said, I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And then I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, so you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul is required of you. The things you have prepared, whose will they be? And now we come to the scary part of the parable. When he applies it to us, so is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. You know, fool is strong language. Yet Jesus calls this man a fool because he focused upon the temporary and forgot the eternal. He placed his security in things and in possessions and not in God. The application is the scary part because he's talking back to this man who was squabbling with his brother. And he says to him, you need to remember that your life does not consist in the abundance of your possessions. It's not about how many things you have. Our life is not about how much we collect. You know, Jesus is talking about the monster that roars in our world, and if we're honest, is the monster that is in all of us that we all have to fight. And we can call it greed. Greed's kind of a word that seems so evil and that we'd often don't consider it, but really that's what it is many times in our own heart when we're wanting more and more and we cannot be content or thankful for what we have. When you think about greed, greed is really involves several aspects. First of all, if you look back to this story, it involves focusing upon yourself. If you'll notice how many times he used the personal pronoun I. I will do this, verse 18. I will tear down my barns. I will store all my grain. I will say to my soul. You see, greed and the monster says you deserve this. You're entitled to this. You're owed this. Greed and the monster plays upon our selfishness. And then greed, the monster, also disguises itself under stewardship. And often even what it might call wise principles. The foolish man says, I will build greater barns and I will set back and I will say I have ample goods laid up for many years and I will relax, eat and drink and be merry. When you think about greed, greed can go in two perspectives. It can be the greedy person who's a saver. And Proverbs talks about this in Proverbs chapter 11, 24 through 28, when it speaks about hoarding and about how some people are tempted to just save, save, and save and to hoard things and collect things. And here's the problem with that. We tend to place our hope and our security in those possessions. And Jesus is saying that's foolish. And it's a misplaced security. But then on the other side, and I know, once again, if we're honest, we struggle with one of these two. And the monster of greed is roaring inside at different times telling us. The other side is spending. And it says that I'm not going to live forever, so I shouldn't worry about saving. So let's just spend and let's focus on pleasure and let's eat, drink, and be merry, as the foolish man says here, and let's spend. And there's even the thought that shopping and having what we want makes us happy, and that I cannot be happy until I have certain things. And so on the other perspective is those who get in trouble, and our culture today leads toward this and has a lot of temptations with debt and overspending and credit cards and all those things. And the ramifications of that is it hurts our discipleship for Christ, because then we can't share, we can't give, and it destroys our marriage. 92% of marriages that are in trouble list money as one of their chief arguments. It puts stress upon the family. It hurts the families from being able to do what they need to do for the kingdom of God or for their family, but they can't because they're overcommitted and overextended, and so they're a slave to work, and they can't live the life they want to live. And ultimately, it comes back to this monster that's constantly roaring, that if we don't choose to fight it, in the words of Jesus, we become a fool. And in this story, this man has to give an account. Verse 20, fool, this night your soul is required of you? And what shall the things that you have prepared? Whose will they be? We're going to leave all this stuff behind. We're not going to take any of it with us, but we're going to give an account of how we've used it. We're going to have to go to God and give an account. And so greed taps into our selfishness. It taps into our various temptations of hoarding and our various temptations of spending. Greed taps into our worries and our fears and says if we don't have it stored up, then we're not going to not be secure. And so all these things can cause the monster to roar. So how are you going to keep the monster at bay in 2015? Well, these are three principles that I need to apply constantly to my life and you need to always be applying to your life. Number one, Jesus in Matthew 6:24 talks about the monster as mammon, personifies it. How do we fight this monster? How do we fight it? Jesus says we've got to be on guard. We've got to be on guard against our covetousness. He says that the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Paul does in 1 Timothy 6. So how do we fight it? Number one, we determine to make money our slave. Determine to make money our slave. You see, money is not intrinsically evil. In fact, many of God's saints throughout the Bible were very wealthy. And God blessed them richly. But we have to understand that money is not evil. It's a tool that is expected to be used. And so we have to determine to control money rather than being controlled by money. In the parable of the talents, Matthew 25, Jesus talks about this. And each of them is given an account, required to give an account for how they have used their money. And then in our text that I want us to go is 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 18 through 19. Several of our passages will be coming from 1 Timothy 6. Look at verse 18 through 19 to begin with. He says they are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous, ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. He says about money, he says here that you need to be willing to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous, ready to share. And then if you do, you're going to store up a treasure for yourself of faith and of good things. And this is what life really is. You see, we have to be willing and able to use money. And part of this, and as we move into the new year, let me make a challenge to you once again. And we have to come back and often do this. We have to look at what we have coming in and what we have going out. Now, that's what a budget is. And I know lots of times we don't like budgets and we think, oh, I can't live on a budget. But listen, you need to know. It's foolish not to know if there's a problem with what's coming in and what's going out. Because if there's an excess going out from what's coming in, there's going to be a big problem somewhere down the line. And so we have to collect and keep good records. Give every dollar a name, we might say. Proverbs says like this, know the status or the condition of your herd to the agricultural-based Hebrew economy. You've got to know how many flock you have. You've got to know. You've got to be willing to understand. So keep good records. We need to beware of our spending and of how we use credit. And erect a plan for the future so that we're saving appropriately, but we're not hoarding or putting our faith in treasure. Let me say one other thing about this. That is that we need to do this if we're married as a team. We need to communicate together about it. And that it will keep or prevent oftentimes conflict and discord from happening if we can at least talk about financial issues. And if we keep rolling them forward and we keep saying, well, we won't talk about it, I'll do my thing, and then we keep things private from our spouse, when those things come out, it often causes a great problem. And so we need to talk about them. We need to be on the same page. And oftentimes a budget or sitting down and talking about how much money we spend and where we're going to spend our money and what's our family goals and what do we want to use our money for, those things will save you much heartache and many problems if you're in a family relationship. So beware of debt and credit cards. Think about how those are often crippling our families, and they prevent you from being able to choose where your money goes because you've already chosen years before and you've just got to send it off to pay that interest. So you be the master of money. So how do you keep the greed monster at bay? Determined to use money as a tool. But then notice, number two, do what the monster says not to do. Give. The monster says it's all about you. The monster says that you deserve more and that you can't be happy until you have more and that you should have the best. But God says that truly life is about sharing. And that being rich is really about being rich toward God. And that laying up treasures is not about laying up treasures on earth, but laying up treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy and thieves cannot break into and steal. That's where we should lay up our treasures, because Jesus says in Matthew 6 that where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So we need to do what the monster says not to do. We need to be willing to give. Don't just live for yourself. Back in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 18 again, they are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share. This is a generous church. We were talking this morning in the elders and deacons meeting, and you see that on the front of your bulletin, if you have a copy of the bulletin, about the giving from 2014. And of course, they'll be working on the budget in the next few weeks and making a presentation about the plans for 2015. But once again, we exceeded our budget, and our budget had been raised, I think, like $300 or $400 from 2013, and yet we were over $100 more this year. And we did it only on 48 Sundays, because the other four fifth Sundays were dedicated to paying off our educational expansion. And we had almost $100,000 donated on those four Sundays just for the educational annex. This does not count the other money given for special mission efforts or for the El Salvador Children's Ministry or the El Salvador Mission Team. So many things. Or the individual benevolent efforts that we make as well. Very generous church. But here's what I want you to think about. Are you a part of that generosity? You see, I don't know, and this is true, I don't know each of you how much you give and things, but here's the thing. The Bible talks some about, in 2 Corinthians 8, the Macedonian Christians and the church being generous. But you know what the Bible primarily talks about? Us being generous as individuals. So as I'm asking you to think about your generosity, I number one want you to know that we are thankful and we recognize the generosity of the church, but I want you to think about this as an individual as well. And you're going to have to give an account of your stewardship to God. And so as you begin 2015, examine your own generosity. Examine your own generosity. When I think about being generous, I want to always emphasize, and we have spent weeks at times studying this, but I think it's important to teach it once again, that we want to encourage people to give at the 10% level. And the reason for that is that we believe that is a plan and an example throughout Scripture, that's a practical figure we can use to know that God is pleased with. So how much of our money should we give to God, we often ask. But a better question is, how much of God's money should we keep for ourselves? Now, we certainly don't want to be legalistic and bind this figure, but we give it as a practical way for us to want to look back and examine our finances and to have it as a goal, as a minimum of where we want to begin and go upward from. So when we think about this, there's some passages we need to read and emphasize. For example, in Deuteronomy chapter 14, back in the Old Testament where it talked about tithing, the Bible tells the purpose of this in verse 23, "And before the Lord your God, in the place that He will choose to make His name dwell there, you shall eat the tithe of your grain, of your wine, and of your oil, and the firstborn of the herd and flock. Here's the reason why they should give this. That you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. The purpose of us giving to God is so that we will recognize He owns it all. The reason we give back out of the first fruits is because we are recognizing by giving a portion back to God that God is the giver of the whole. And it's a statement that my blessings are not deserving of who I am. My blessings don't come from myself alone, but my blessings come from above. And we share with others. In Malachi chapter 3, the Bible talks about robbing God. And certainly we always want to make sure that we are not robbing God. So as we look over our finances, whether we're giving in an individual basis to help the poor, help a missionary, or to the church, and giving to the church treasury, we want to make sure that we're giving God His portion. That we're not robbing God. Colossians 3 says this, "Will a man rob God? For you are robbing me. But you say, how have we robbed you? In your tithes and in your contributions. You are cursed with a curse, for you are robbing me, the whole nation of you." You see, this is really about our faith. And it takes faith to give at this level or above. You know what? God's shovel is always bigger than your shovel. And it always increases your faith to see God work. And nothing really happens until God's people step out on faith. And so go to another passage with me, 1 Corinthians chapter 16. As you think about your giving this year, I think it's always important to look back at this passage where Paul commanded giving. And he says in verse 2, on the first day of every week, notice that there should be regular giving. Regular giving. You should make sure that you're giving regularly. Each of you is to put something aside. Not only should there be regular giving, but there should be personal giving. Each of you. Giving is something that we each have a responsibility to do. And then he says, notice the rest of the verse here. You should put something aside, storing it up, that you should give purposefully. Or systematically. You know, you shouldn't just come in or get up on Sunday and think, well, what do I have in my wallet? I don't know about you, but if I just went by that, most of the time it's not very much. Especially in our day and age today, we're not very good at carrying cash, many of us. Giving is something that should be purposeful. We should think about it. Consider it. Think about what we're giving to and how much we're giving and how much we're really giving. Put a pencil and paper to it, considering the overall wealth that we have. Should be purposeful. Laying something aside, storing something up, Paul says. And finally, our giving should be, in the last part of that, as each has prospered, or as he may prosper. The last thing our giving should be is it should be proportional. God doesn't expect you to give everything you have. Should be proportional to what you prospered. He expects you to be able to take care of your family and meet your other needs as well. And he also doesn't expect me to give the same as you or you to give the same as somebody else. He expects us to give as each of us has prospered. So it needs to be proportional. So when you think about your giving this year, think about it being regular. Think about it being personal. Think about it being purposeful. Think about it being proportional. And remember that all of these in 2 Corinthians 8:24 are a proof of your love. That giving really is saying, thanks, God. Giving is saying, I love you, God. Giving is saying, I want to share with you. And so go back to 1 Timothy, back to 6:18. He says, let us be rich in doing good works. Let us be rich in sharing. And so find opportunities to share of your blessings, your talents, your abilities, your blessings with others. And yes, that involves writing a check at times, but it also involves a lot of other things. Using what God has blessed you to give others. You know what you do every time you do that? You push the monster of greed that wants to constantly rise up a little farther down. The third thing is that, and I know we're about out of time, and this one's the last point that's not that long, is we have to control our minds. Control your mind. You see, really, how we keep greed at bay, how we do not become the rich fool, is that we focus on being content and we're thankful for what we have. When you go back to 1 Timothy, once again, chapter 6, if you go back to the earlier verses, verses 6 through 10, Paul would say this, "There is great gain in godliness with contentment. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing with these, we will be content. But those who desire," that's our word for involving the concept of greed again. If we are covetous, or if we are desiring, if we're greedy, to be rich, fall into temptation and into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. In other words, you fall into the hands of the monster. For the love of money, the monster of greed, is the root of all kinds of evil. It's the root of all kinds of evil. So how do you keep the monster at bay? You learn to enjoy and be thankful and to be content with what you have. And boy, that's often tough, isn't it? But really, the battle is in our mind. And let me say that I think this is something we have to be serious about as Christians today. Because we live in a culture that is always trying to get us to buy what they're selling. I mean, that's their job. But all the constant pressure to buy and to have more, it can lead us to being very dissatisfied and discontent and feeling like we're not accomplishing very much. And we need to come back to the lessons we talk about around Thanksgiving. Being thankful, counting our blessings, and realizing that this life does not consist in the abundance of our possessions. I want to close with a story I read from someone who wrote online. And he wrote this about how the monster had won in the life of his family and how he did not want it to win in his life. He said, "My dad was always working 12 to 15 hour days, 6, sometimes 7 days a week. He has owned a few different businesses and no one required him to do that, but it was just what he did. I really never saw him growing up except for a few minutes here and there and when we went to church on Sundays. But I'm very much like him in a number of ways. But I would not say we are close. He's having health problems and he doesn't want to quit working. But I'm afraid he's going to have to. He doesn't know how to do anything else. And it's kind of sad. The ironic thing is that my parents now have lots of money, but nothing they want to spend it upon except buying toys for the grandkids. While he's never said it out loud, I really think if he had it to do over again, he would have been much more engaged in the family. It would have been nice to be able to have it an easy, fun relationship with my dad. I guess I'm saying that you don't want to look back when you're 65 and see that all of your time was spent at work. I'm trying very hard not to be the same way." The monster won. And we could tell a lot of other stories about how the monster can win, from the divorce courts that allows the monster to win because marriages have been broken because they cannot get along about money or they're so in debt that it cripples their family. We could tell story after story of people that have become unfaithful or kids that grew up not knowing the Lord because their parents were so busy chasing the greed monster. Here's the point. Don't let the monster win. Fight it daily. Make money your slave. Choose to share and give. Control your mind by being content and thankful. If you're here this morning and you're not a child of God, if you need to put Christ on in baptism, we have that prepared where we can help you in doing that this morning. If you need to rededicate your life, if you want to confess sin, the monster has been winning and you want to confess sin, sin of this nature, of any other nature, come as together we stand and sing.